What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to Clown Questions, the show where there are no dumb questions. I'm your host, Matt K. Maurer, and the question I'm asking today is, are sports rigged? I sure shit hope not. I'll attempt to answer that question in addition to some other questions. No guests today, but maybe a little bit of a little different feel, maybe a different sound. That's because I'm using this new microphone. The camera got backed up a little bit. You can see the F-bomb jar in frame. I don't know if this is what I'll do going forward, but I'm trying it out because I got a wonderful new microphone. Thank you, John and Anna, my sister and her hubby, for this awesome microphone. So I'm excited to see what it can do. So without further ado, who's down to clown?
That's a clown question, bro.
So, are sports rigged? I sure as shit hope not. I would feel like a real asshole if I learned that all sports are rigged. It's like the WWE, everything. They're all actors. Everyone already knows what's going to happen. That would really suck. I don't even know. I would probably have to disband this podcast. I'd probably have to delete my account. Goosebump Sports is, I don't know. I really hope it's not rigged, but Friday night we may have found some evidence that sports could be rigged. If anyone watched the Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight, you probably weren't able to watch it because Netflix was buffering like crazy. No one could get shit in there. But obviously Jake Paul won decisively, unanimously, but it was weird because it didn't look, obviously we knew we weren't going to see prime Mike, but it really looked like he was holding back. If you look at the training videos and compare him to the real fight videos, he looks twice as slow. He looks twice as old. It's crazy. So I'm starting to think that maybe that was a big payday from Jake Paul that said, hey, Mike, I'll throw in an extra $10 million if you let me win. And it looked like he let Mike win, but I'm actually getting this from a different Mike, Michael Irvin. He claimed on television, I forget which show he's on, but Michael Irvin was claiming there was a no uppercuts clause in the contract. And we haven't seen the contract. I tried to corroborate this report elsewhere. I could only find the claim from Michael Irvin. So really not a whole lot to back it up. I don't really trust Michael Irvin as a source, but he is a sports analyst. So I should, you know, give some credence to what he's saying here. I hope I used that word right. I don't know if I did, but his idea of there being a no uppercut clause was he didn't see any uppercuts from Mike Tyson. I don't think I did either. And apparently, I guess that's his most powerful punch. So it was probably a calculated move by Jake Paul and the fight organizers to be like, Mike, no uppercuts. We got to let Jake win it because we rigged it that way. You can't do it. And yeah. I hate that I'm talking about this fight. I hate that the thumbnail for this video is Jake and Mike because that fight pissed me off so much. I really hope people join in on my boycott. I will never watch another Jake Paul fight again. Mark my words. I'm just sick of it. It's all showmanship. It's all fake. Jake, you're not a real boxer. The one boxer you beat, the one boxer you were up against, Fury, he beat you. So you're not a real boxer. You're it's elder abuse what you did to Mike Tyson. But where was I? Oh yeah, I'm boycotting Jake Paul fights. And I'd like to boycott Netflix, but they got a lot of good stuff in there. But yeah, Netflix is obviously under fire. 60 million people tuned in to watch this fight, and millions upon millions of people couldn't watch it because the fight was buffering. It kept getting stuck at 25%. But this is interesting because there was a Florida man, of course, is very famous, but Florida man files lawsuit against Netflix over the Tyson-Paul fight streaming issues. The complaint brought by Hillsborough County resident Ronald Blue,
blue in quotes, Denton, alleged breach of contract and unfair deceptive actions on behalf of Netflix when users were faced with an unwatchable live stream during Friday's event. I believe he's seeking like $50 million in the lawsuit. So, I mean, good for Blue Denton. That's a really dope name, by the way. Blue Denton. That sounds pretty cool, in my opinion. But yeah, $50 million. Netflix might have to pony it up. But my question is, like, that money doesn't all go to Blue, right? Blue Denton doesn't. Like, why should he get the money? I was sitting at home pissed. I had a little get-together for the fight, and we couldn't even fucking watch it. There's a dollar for the F-bomb jar, which I think is in view of frame here. So I will just add to that charitable cause. But yeah, hoping Blue Denton wins that lawsuit. Maybe that obviously they're not going to give him $50 million. Maybe they make it a class action and I could join in on the suit. I'd like to get some money from Netflix. That would be nice. Let's move on here with my next question. Do we need divisions? I think we might. And I've been talking about this, how the whole super conference thing doesn't make sense. Why did they, how come as the conferences grow larger and larger, we eliminated divisions completely? I can understand it from a Big Ten perspective because you had Michigan and Ohio State in that same division. So you always had Ohio State or Michigan just beating up on whoever the terrible, you know, team out of the Big Ten West was in that championship game. But I kind of think we need to bring them back. I think you can separate these big teams, but I should answer the question, why might we need divisions? That would probably be a better way to start this. It's because 2 days later, it was either on Sunday or Monday. I think they should have known immediately, but basically 24 to 48 hours later, the NCAA announced that Oregon has clinched a Big Ten championship berth after a, quote, comprehensive evaluation, end quote. That was so weird to me, because why do you need to evaluate anything? Shouldn't it all be built in the rules? Shouldn't you know exactly when someone clinches? Usually when someone clinches a berth for the playoffs, or in this case, the Big Ten championship game, you know right away. It should have been right after they beat Wisconsin. Shout out Wisconsin for staying in that game, by the way, but right when they won that game, they should have known, oh, and they've clinched a Big Ten championship berth. The fact that it takes you a comprehensive evaluation to determine whether or not they're in the championship game is just stupid. How do you not already have this in the rule book? I guess they don't have enough tiebreakers, so maybe it goes to a committee vote or some stupid shit like that. But I don't know. I don't know if divisions could solve the problem, but I know adding a division would bring in another built-in tiebreaker. You got division record. You can still go by conference record and overall record, and then division record would be a third tiebreaker where you could, maybe make this easier. You don't have to get a comprehensive evaluation. But, yeah, I understand people not wanting too many good teams in one division in a conference, because that could lead to someone getting left out and then someone getting their ass kicked in the championship game. So I don't know if it solves the problem, but I still feel like to people that are like, oh, we can't make these divisions, you might get two good teams. Just separate the best teams. Don't put Georgia and Bama in the same division. Maybe even like you can do a relegation system like in the EPL. You know, you change the divisions each year. Like, oh, now that Michigan sucks, we can move them back to Ohio State's division. Stuff like that. I don't know. Just an idea. I just think it's hilarious that they needed to make a comprehensive evaluation to determine that Oregon is, in fact, in the Big Ten championship. That should have been knowledge that you know immediately. So bring back divisions in college football. The super conferences could use it. Let's talk some basketball. And my basketball-related question is, who really won? As I make an awkward pause to take a drink out of this glass bottle, I will attempt to answer this question. Who really won? I'm just realizing now that I didn't look up the opponents, which is something I would need to know to determine who won these games. But basically, in the NBA, we've had three different game winners this past week. Great. Who doesn't love a good game winner? You know, two of them buzzer beaters. One of them was Damian Lillard winning it for the Bucks. But all three of those, after the fact, the NBA came out and announced that, yeah, technically that shouldn't have been a game winner. They announced that Jason Tatum traveled on his buzzer-beating three. They also announced that Julius Randle traveled on his buzzer-beating three. The NBA also announced that Giannis stepped out of bounds right before Damian Lillard's game winner. None of these should have counted. The Rockets should have won. I forget who they were playing. And that really is awkward. But the Celtics, T-Wolves, and Bucks should have lost. That was my point. They didn't technically really win. Those weren't really game winners. Those are buzzer beater game winners with an asterisk there. They didn't really win. But let me answer in the more broad scope of basketball. Who really won? We did. We, the people, have won. Maybe some executives saw one of my previous podcasts where I was banging on the table for inside the NBA. We, the people, have done it. We've brought it back. They've heard our cries, our pleas to keep this incredible halftime show on television, and it will live. TNT obviously will not be broadcasting NBA games. That's done and settled. Amazon Prime took all their stuff. But ESPN and ABC will be licensing the Inside the NBA show. So we will get to see Chuck, Shaq, Kenny the Jet, and EJ on that show next year. This will not be a farewell run for them. Obviously, I'm glad the show is staying. The only bad part about that is they don't have the whole, you know, the 2 weeks notice thing where they're extra, extra. I'm at a loss for words here. Were they overly zealous in their comedic approach? I guess is what I'm trying to say here. But who cares? We've got it back, and that's that. Let's keep talking some NBA with this next question. Who's breaking records? A lot of people. Well, technically only one of these is a record. I don't know. There's a lot of records that, like, I don't know if you technically consider them a record. Here's an example. James Harden has passed Ray Allen for the second most three-pointers made in a career ever. See, that's not technically a record. The record is Steph Curry. Steph Curry has the most. That's the record. So Harden didn't technically, break a record, but second most threes of all time. He's apparently the second greatest shooter of all time now. But obviously, a reporter had to ask him about Curry. And here's James Harden's quote. "I'm one of the most confident guys that we have in this league. But no, I probably won't catch Steph. I don't think anybody will. He can shoot the shit out of the ball." Well said by James Harden there. Congrats for passing Ray Allen. What were the other records? We had LeBron James with four straight triple-doubles. He became the oldest player ever that was his career high, that many. He had never had that many triple-doubles in a row, his career high there. And he became the oldest player to ever record three straight triple-doubles since LeBron James. LeBron did it at age 39, and before that, he did it at age 35. So I guess he broke his own record. Again, don't really know if that's a record since he already had it. I guess he just made he moved the record even further. I don't think anyone will ever catch that one, getting triple doubles like that at age 39. His record there is probably safe. Here's another kind of non-record. Russell Westbrook. He's become the first player ever with 200 career triple doubles. Again, I don't know if that's a record because he already had the record for most triple doubles. 200 is just an arbitrary number. It sounds nice. I don't know why sports we do that. We're we'll take an arbitrary number, like, you know, the 100 home runs. I guess we just like round numbers, and it sounds cooler to say I have 100 home runs than it does to say I have 97 home runs. So I suppose that makes some sense. But back on track, this one is actually a record. This one, by far, is the best record of all these non-records I've mentioned, and it is a record. Gino Auriemma has passed Tara Vanderveer for most wins all time. He now has 1,217 wins as a college basketball coach, passing Tara Vanderveer, who was a multi-time national champion with Stanford. And yeah, nothing else I can say other than GOAT. The greatest, obviously greatest women's basketball coach in history, but I mean, greatest coach ever in basketball history. I mean, that's the men's and the women's record. Obviously, Geno's had some dominant women's Huskies basketball teams. And yeah, he will probably continue that dominance now that Miss Caitlin Clark is in the league. So he'll probably get another ring this year. But yeah, congrats, Geno. Most all-time wins by any coach ever in basketball, in at least college basketball. That's probably beats the NBA record as well. Let's stop talking basketball. No one cares about basketball. It's November. Let's talk football. And that question, I have two actually football questions. They're both related to the city of New York, the Big Apple. The first one being, why do the Jets suck? I wish I had an answer. I've been looking for answers everywhere. I have none. And the bad part is, I don't even think the Jets have any answers. I don't know if the Jets know why they're bad. Obviously, early in the season, they fired Robert Saleh, their head coach, but just a few days ago, they announced that they are firing their GM, Joe Douglas. So, okay, let's try to deduce this. If they just fired their GM, it probably wasn't the coach's fault. They were blaming the coach at first, fired him. So now it's probably the GM's fault, right? It's on him. Shouldn't have went out and got Devontae. You know, should have spent more money on the O-line, blah, blah, blah. But it seems that Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas might not be the only scapegoats from this Jets disaster class of a season. Because apparently in week four, Woody Johnson wanted to bench Aaron Rodgers. You wanted Tyrod Taylor. Did you really think Tyrod Taylor was going to do a better job? Or do they got Jordan Travis? Either way, there's no way you thought one of those guys was going to be better than Rodgers. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know why Woody Johnson would lie about that comment, knowing it would obviously go public or get leaked or however people found out. So it seems like Woody is prepared to make Rodgers the new scapegoat after making Joe Douglas the new scapegoat, formerly, because Robert Saleh was the original scapegoat. But yeah, Woody Johnson, inventor of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I think he probably wanted to bench Rodgers because he's a vaccine denier. That's probably what happened. He's sick of it. He's sick of the RFK mentality. And that's the only political thing I'm going to say the rest of this podcast. Let's get to our next question. Why isn't Drew Lock starting? Why isn't Drew Lock starting? Well, a week ago, the answer would have been like, he's not that good. But this week, the answer is because the Giants are trying to tank. The Giants announced this week that they are benching Daniel Jones for Tommy DeVito. Tommy DeVito. Gabagool. Tommy. I'm a Tommy with Sean Chilato. With a little Gabagool on. Fun fact, you cannot be racist against Italians because they are white. I think that's how that works. Yeah. So Tommy Cutlets is the new starting quarterback for the New York Giants. But at the same time, they also announced that Daniel Jones will be QB3. That's whatever. They want to move on from Daniel Jones, so they're not even giving him a chance. But before this week, Drew Lock was listed as the backup quarterback as QB2. So if you're going to bench Daniel Jones, the logical thing to do would be to put Drew Lock in there. But they're not going to put Drew Lock in there because they know at this point in their careers, maybe just overall, Drew Lock's a better player. Drew Lock won an NFL game last year for the Seahawks, and it was largely due in part to his huge performance, coming in for Geno. But yeah, he should be the starter, but they don't want to start him because they know he might fuck around and win a few games as my Auntie Julie gets $1 richer. Yeah, they're playing DeVito because they know they have a better chance to lose. They want to get the best draft pick as possible. You know, they're probably looking at maybe a Shedeur Sanders, maybe a Carson Beck. They're in the market for a quarterback. So they're not going to let Drew Lock go out there because they know, A, Drew Lock might win them some games, which would hurt their draft position, and B, maybe they don't want Drew Lock to play because they know they might get sucked in and they might fall in love with him how they fell in love with Daniel Jones and then sign him to a $40 million a year deal. But yeah, just chaos in New York for both of these NFL teams. Another wrinkle to this story is that Brian Daboll said they haven't decided whether Daniel Jones or Tim Boyle will be the QB3 this week. They just signed Tim Boyle to the practice squad on Tuesday, and now they're potentially looking at moving him to QB3 ahead of Daniel Jones. So yeah, there's a chance Daniel Jones could be demoted to QB4. So I don't like beating up on Daniel Jones here. You know, I have him in Dynasty Fantasy Football. Great pick there, obviously. I'm not trying to beat up on him. I'm just pointing out that Drew Lock should be the starter, and we all know what you're doing with Tommy DeVito. You're trying to tank. And that's why this week's first year interruption is with Drew Lock, so we can get it straight from the source himself. Listen to what Drew Lock has to say. Obviously, the reporter had to ask him, weren't you QB2 last week? And this is what Drew Lock had to say. Thank you, Drew Lock, for being on this week's First Year Interruption.
How do you not wonder, well, why was I the number two the whole time then? Why wasn't he the number two then, if that's what you saw?
Again, that's a question I might still have for myself. Noah's expressed to me that I was going to be the two, and I don't know, it's just an interesting situation. Not much I can really say about it besides, again, I'm gonna be here for him, and we're still communicating, still very good friends, believe it or not. I'm gonna be here for him. This team needs to get a win, and we start winning, everything gets a little better around here.
Not really much I can say there. You know, it was expressed to me that I'm gonna be the number two. He's like, not much I can say on it. He couldn't say much because he knows the answer to that reporter's question. The answer is they're trying to tank. But you can't say that. There'll be an investigation. The Giants will fire you. They'll try to blackball you from the league. So you can't say it. But that's exactly what's happening. The Giants are tanking. And maybe the Jets should follow suit. Kind of a cheap shot, but I don't know. We're going to see Rodgers in a Minnesota Vikings uniform next year because it looks like the Jets are moving on. The same way the Giants are moving on from Daniel Jones. Give Drew Lock a chance. Come on. You never know. You could sneak into the wild card. Obviously not. They're probably mathematically eliminated at this point. But, For those who don't know, Drew Lock has a horse cock. I should have mentioned that from the jump. That's how you know he's a great quarterback. I don't know why I brought that up. I just thought there might be a few people who didn't know that Drew Lock had a horse cock, so I thought I would tell them. I was mainly talking to the King. By the way, King, I'm sorry. He's been clamoring He's been itching to get back on the podcast. I need to get you back on. These past 2 weeks, I have had no one because I've been bad planner. You know, probably a more accurate way to describe that is I've been lazy. This week, I'm switching to the new thing, but might have to have the King on next week for a little Thanksgiving Day preview or something. He also wants to do a round table, but I think might have him on before the round table so he can explain to me what a round table is. And can I do a round table on a square table? We'll see. But let's go to everyone's favorite moment of the week, which is, of course, the goosebump moments of the week. Let's start it off at number 10 with a Dame Time game winner in Milwaukee.
He's going to go with it.
They got two to work with. Dame off the bounce against Brooks. Dame driving inside. Gets it to go. Gives the Bucks the lead with 3.9 left. Dame Time.
Number 9, J.K. Dobbins runs it in to win it for the Chargers.
Matt Lund, the fullback in front of J.K. Dobbins, runs left. Dobbins takes off. Dobbins inside the 10. Dobbins to the end zone. In for the touchdown. And the Chargers take the lead.
Number 8, Raheem Sanders breaks multiple tackles on his game-winning touchdown run for South Carolina.
He's made some big plays downfield.
Got a small defender on him. Shovel pass Sanders. Rocket Sanders dances to the 5. And he punishes his way into the end zone. South Carolina back in front.
Number 7, R.J. Green gets the shot off at the buzzer to win it for Wagner.
Quick catch and shoot. Inside Green. Ball loose. Throws it up. Will it count? I don't know if it counted. They're saying it does on the floor, but they're going to review it. That ball got tipped around. There's celebration in the corner, but I think there's a lot to review here.
Number 6, Geno Smith runs in the game winner with just 13 seconds on the clock.
Under 20, Smith back to throw. Smith takes off. Geno Smith, end zone ahead. Touchdown, Seattle. With 12 seconds, Geno Smith again puts the Seahawks on his back.
Number 5, Carl Brooks' block wins it for the Packers.
And it's blocked! Oh my goodness, the Packers block it, and they're going to win! Green Bay survives!
Number 4, Clemson quarterback Cade Klubnik gives them the lead on a 50-yard touchdown run.
He takes off running up the middle, first down. Inside the 35, he's going to go! Cade Klubnik, touchdown Clemson, 50 yards!
Number 3, Jason Tatum hits the 3 at the horn to win it for Boston.
Pushed down by Mitchell, no foul. Tatum's got to go in a hurry. He pulls up.
Number 2, Anta Brusevich's buzzer beater gives Charleston the W.
3.6 to go in Charleston. Brusevich for the win! Got it! Anta Brusevich at the buzzer!
Anta Brusevich!
Number 1 moment of the week, Julius Randle beats the buzzer to win it for the T-Wolves.
Over to Randle. Randle got it off in time.
Oh, he's cold-blooded! Timberwolves win! His first signature moment in a Timberwolves uniform. A game winner.
Yo, I just noticed that Randle broke that man's ankles on that game winner. I put it at number 1. How did I not even notice that that man needs a map. Snatched that man's ankles. Snatched his soul. But yeah, buzzer beaters galore in this goosebump moments of the week. Good to see Julius Randle succeeding immediately for the Timberwolves. He's had a rough go of it in New York these past couple of years. So
Seeing him happy made me happy. I don't know why. I'm not like a Julius Randle fan or anything. It just kind of, I don't know. I guess it's just kind of, maybe he's been a little mistreated by the New York organization. So it's good to see him to succeed. Good seeing him succeed. Let's finish out this new show that hopefully goes well with this new microphone. Thank you again, John and Anna. Appreciate that. But let's end the show as we usually do with a TNF pick. Thursday Night Football this week, we got Steelers at the Browns. The Steelers are 3.5-point favorites. That is going to be my pick. My pick is Steelers minus 3.5. I really want to pick my man Jameis Winston and the Browns here. But I can't deny the Steelers have maybe the best defense in the entire NFL. So, I can't even lie. This team is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And it's I can't fumble on the last word. This team is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And perhaps it's because the Steelers did something that Justin Fields haters had been clamoring for weeks. Let Russ cook.